Views of the United States government.
This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. The White House party on Monday, or I should say the Republican Party on Monday, officially nominated former President Donald Trump to run again for the White House. At the start of the party's national convention in Milwaukee, Donald Trump's son, Eric, represented the state of Florida.
We hereby nominate every single one of them for the greatest president that's ever lived, and that's Donald J. Trump. Hereby declaring him the Republican nominee for President of the United States of America.
In the wake of the assassination attempt, Trump said he is revising his acceptance speech to emphasize national unity rather than highlight his differences with President Joe Biden. A Trump victory in the U.S. November elections would put into question Washington's continued support for Ukraine as its war against Russia drags on, but Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said Monday he was not concerned about that prospect. VOA's Jeff Custer tells us more.
Trump has been noncommittal about continued support for Ukraine if he were elected. During his debate with U.S. President Joe Biden, Trump indicated he felt the U.S. was spending too much on the war in Ukraine. And following a meeting with Trump earlier this year, Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban, an ally of Russian President Vladimir Putin, said Trump assured him aid to Ukraine would stop if he were elected. But speaking at a news conference in Kyiv Monday, Zelensky said he was not afraid of a Trump presidency. I think that if Donald Trump became president, we will work together. I'm not worried about this, he said. Zelensky said he met with several Republican governors while in Washington last week for the NATO summit and said he was assured of the party's backing. Jeff Custer, VOA News.
The European Commission says that the Commission president and other top EU officials will boycott informal meetings hosted by Hungary while the country holds the EU's rotating presidency. This is VOA News. The European Union's foreign policy chief, Josep Borrell, said that he described Israel's massive airstrike over the weekend as an unbearable and unacceptable event. Israel said that it targeted Hamas' shadowy military commander, Mohammed Deif, in a strike Saturday in the crowded southern Gaza Strip that killed at least 90 people, including children. Speaking in Brussels at a joint news conference with Jordan's foreign minister, who is in Brussels to attend the 15th EU-Jordan Council meeting, Borrell said that the rise in civilian casualties must end.
The massive bombing with heavy death toll in Mawazi refugee camp on Saturday is unbearable and unacceptable. The constant rise of the number of civilian casualties, as I said, is unbearable and underlines the urgency of establishing a ceasefire.
At least 300 people were wounded in Saturday's strike, one of the deadliest in the nine-month war sparked by Hamas's October 7th assault on southern Israel that killed about 1,200 people, mostly civilians, and took more than 200 hostage. A bill that would have made Gambia the first country in the world to reverse a ban on female genital mutilation has been rejected by lawmakers and will not move to a third reading. That's according to Parliament Speaker on Monday, David Doyle with Reuters.
The bill had sparked a public debate around the practice in the Muslim-majority country. The lawmaker who took the proposal to Parliament, Almene Jibba, said he was upholding religion, culture, and tradition. But many Islamic scholars dispute his arguments. The World Health Organization says FGM has no health benefits and can lead to excessive bleeding, shock, psychological problems, and even death. Parliament voted again on Monday ahead of a third and final reading scheduled for later this month. Around 30 lawmakers voted against each clause, prompting the Speaker, Fabakari Tombong-Jatta, to stop the bill moving forward to the final reading.
President Paul Kagame has won 99% of the vote in provisional results from Rwanda's presidential election. According to election authorities, it's an outcome that was widely expected as the country's longtime ruler aims to extend his three-decade grip on power. His opponents were collectively getting under 1% of the vote in provisional results, accounting for 79% of all ballots cast. The result mirrored the outcome in 2017 when Kagame took nearly 99% of the vote. Final results are expected by July 27th, although it could be announced sooner. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Welcome to the Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Buck in Washington. Today is Tuesday, July 16th, and here are some of the stories we are following. The Republican Party officially nominates Donald Trump as its presidential candidate and approves his vice presidential running mate.
J.D. Vance, he's the Republican senator from Ohio. He's a best-selling author. He wrote the book called The Hillbilly Elegy, true story about his life. He was once an outspoken critic of Donald Trump.
We have a report about the investigation into Trump's assassination attempt. Kenya's youth are planning to hold what they call the mother of all protests across the country today, Tuesday. Malawi declares an end to the country's deadliest cholera outbreak. Rwandan President Kagame takes a commanding lead in Monday's presidential election.
At this point, the announcements show that President Kagame has 99.15%. You know, that's very, very high. And it shows the Democratic Green Party candidate, Frank Habineza, with 0.53%.
And Gambia's parliament rejects a bill that would have ended a ban on female genital mutilation in the country. And those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Republican Party has officially nominated former President Donald Trump as its candidate for the 2024 presidential election. Delegates are meeting in the Midwestern city of Milwaukee in Wisconsin for the convention. The nomination Monday came on the same day that former President Trump named Ohio Senator J.D. Vance as his vice presidential running mate. VOA's Carol Van Dam is covering the gathering.
It was pretty exciting when the announcement was made. Actually, on the floor, we've got J.D. Vance standing there and looking very proud and excited, and just the whole crowd. I just came from the Pfizer Center floor, and it was just buzzing with electricity, with people very happy, kind of in a celebratory mood and ready to, I think, party, because they seem to be wholeheartedly behind this candidate. You know, J.D. Vance, he's the Republican senator from Ohio. He's a best-selling author. He wrote the book called The Hillbilly Elegy, which I happen to read. It's like a rags-to-riches story, his true story about his life. He was once an outspoken critic of Donald Trump, but that was a fairly long time ago now, in retrospect. And, you know, he has changed into being a very strong conservative supporter of Mr. Trump. He's incredibly young. He's 39 years old. And he is a Yale University graduate.
Particularly this year when the issue of age, as you said, he's very young.
Yeah, I think that was an issue for Donald Trump, because obviously he's been criticized too for his age, along with President Joe Biden, who is 81 years old. He's also 78 years old, not that far apart from the president. So bringing this guy along and making him his VP is going to, a lot of people told me on the floor, the delegate said, it's going to energize the ticket.
So, Carol, tell us about Monday's other activities at the convention, including the official nomination of former President Donald Trump.
Well, it will be the official nomination coming up, but there's still a lot of pomp and ceremony kind of thing. And there was the roll call of all the states individually, you know, showing their support for Donald Trump. And they all were weighing in, all the delegates, for standing steadfastly behind Mr. Trump as far as their weight goes for who they were supporting for the Republican presidential candidate. Also, they were trying to shore up the GOP platform for the right to life abortion, which has been a contentious issue among the Republicans themselves, because the conservatives want to see a federal ban on abortion, and many other moderate Republicans do not. And Donald Trump has even said that he doesn't support a federal ban. He would like to see that issue decided state by state.
This convention is taking place following Saturday's attempted assassination of former President Trump. Do you notice any visible impact, including whether there's be increased security at the convention?
Most definitely. Security is a big, big thing. They've expanded the perimeter around the Pfizer Center where the convention is being held, as well as the media center, which is just a block away, and you can hardly walk.
Carol, thank you so much again. A pleasure speaking with you. We shall talk again.
Glad to be here with you, James.
That's VOA's Carol Van Dam covering the Republican Party National Convention in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. The United States Secret Service says it's confident in its ability to safeguard this week's Republican National Convention in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. This after the party's leader, Donald Trump, survived an assassination attempt over the weekend. VOA's Arash Arabasadi has more.
Take a look at what happened over.
The campaign of former President Donald Trump says he's fine after surviving what the FBI described as an assassination attempt at a campaign stop Saturday night. Trump says he was shot in the ear during the attack by what authorities described as an AR-style rifle, like those used in several mass shootings in the United States. The FBI identified 20-year-old Thomas Matthew Crooks as Trump's would-be assassin, and the Secret Service says it fatally shot him outside the rally venue. The Biden administration says it is looking into security failures. Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas at a White House briefing as carried on the Hill's YouTube channel.
At President Biden's direction, an independent review of the incident will be conducted, one that will examine the Secret Service's and other law enforcement actions before, during, and after the shooting to identify the immediate and longer-term corrective actions required to ensure that the no-fail mission of protecting national leaders is most effectively met.
My fellow Americans.
The White House says Biden spoke with Trump by phone, and the president later addressed the nation from the Oval Office. He called for unity while condemning the violence that's plagued American politics, including the January 6th assault on the U.S. Capitol and extremists threatening election workers. Trump is in Milwaukee this week for the Republican National Convention, which will likely make official his nomination as the party's candidate for president. But after the shooting in Pennsylvania, the Secret Service is responding to questions about its ability to safeguard the venue. Secret Service Coordinator for the RNC, Audrey Gibson Caccino, speaking at a news conference as provided by AP.
We are confident in the security plans that are in place for this event, and we're ready to go. It's been an 18-month process. We've worked together over that 18 months to develop operational security plans for any and all aspects of security related to this event.
The Secret Service calls this a national special security event, the highest security designation the federal government provides. Milwaukee's Mayor Cavalier Johnson echoed his confidence in the 18-month process, adding that local first responders, as well as state law enforcement, stand at the ready to safeguard the RNC. Back in Pennsylvania, cameras captured FBI agents entering the home of suspected shooter Crooks in the Bethel Park area. His motives for the shooting remain a mystery, but how he carried out the attack in the first place became a political flashpoint. As House Committee on Oversight and Accountability Chairman James Comer of Kentucky said, Americans demand answers. Adding that the committee will soon send a formal invitation for a hearing to Secret Service Director Kimberly Cheadle. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
Preliminary results from Monday's presidential election in Rwanda show that incumbent President Paul Kagame has gained 99% of the votes counted. The National Electoral Commission, also known as NEC, says Frank Habineza of the Democratic Green Party received 0.53%, while independent candidate Philippe Payimana received 0.32%. President Kagame has ruled Rwanda since 2000. VOA's National VOA's Nairobi Bureau Chief Mariama Diallo is in Rwanda covering the election. She tells me that voting was generally peaceful.
Well, I think in the beginning it seems like turnout was super high. I think from at least the voting center that I went in, and I think it was the same voting center as, you know, where President Kagame voted eventually. So the lines were long, you know, long, but they didn't wait too long because everything went smooth. They came in, waited patiently, voted, and then left. But there were many, many little centers inside of that school, and, you know, it just looked like a lot of people came out to vote.
Mariama, I hear that the Elections Commission has begun to announce some results. What can you tell us?
I'm actually at the National Electoral Commission right now. Basically, the chairwoman just announced the preliminary results about 10 minutes ago. We are actually, I don't know if you can hear the background, I have to get out a little bit because President Kagame is, you know, actually doing an acceptance speech at this point. I think the other opposition candidate did speak a little bit earlier, right before President Kagame. And Mpayimano Philip, he did say, from what I can understand very quickly in Kinyarwanda, that, you know, if this was the choice of the Rwandans, it's a democracy, and he respects that. He also did talk about the fact that he was going to wait to get the official results. But at this point, the announcements show that President Kagame has 99.15%. You know, that's very, very high, and it shows the Democratic Green Party candidate, Frank Habineza, with 0.53%, and Philip, who we just spoke about, who got 0.32%.
So these are preliminary results. It seems that President Kagame is on the road to be reelected.
Absolutely. I mean, if he's making an acceptance speech at this point, I think the gap is big enough that maybe he's confident that even if it gets challenged, you know, maybe it won't get there. But I'm not so sure he's actually speaking in Kinyarwanda at this point. We'll find out more. I think right after his acceptance speech, we're told that maybe the chairwoman of the National Electoral Commission might do a presser just to explain what are the next steps and what will happen.
What's on the timetable for today, Tuesday? Because this is supposed to be a two-day election. What's next?
Well, that's actually what we're going to hear about after President Kagame's acceptance speech. They will give us the next steps of what is supposed to happen. Because don't forget, this year it's kind of new. They combined the parliamentary elections with the presidential elections. So there are a few different things that are happening. So I guess we'll get more details about that after this preliminary result.
Maria Madiello, thank you so much again. We look forward to speaking with you again the next day.
Thank you very much, James.
That's VOA's Nairobi Bureau Chief Mariama Diallo speaking with us from the Rwandan capital, Kigali, where she is covering the country's presidential and parliamentary elections. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, July 16th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Members of Kenya's youth are planning to hold what they are calling the mother of all protests across the country today, Tuesday, to press home their demand for the resignation of President William Ruto. Called Generation Z or Gen Z, the youth movement says the president has not kept his promise to solve the economic challenges facing the country. The protest comes as the president continues a six-day multi-sectorial dialogue days after dissolving his cabinet. Robert Mwangi is one of the Gen Z protesters. He tells VOA's Peter Clotty that the Ruto administration has failed to be accountable to the people.
The plan for today's protest is very clear. It is the Gen Z movement. One goal. We only have one goal. We are saying that Ruto must go.
But why must he go? He met all the Gen Zs on social media. He met some of your demands, dissolved his cabinet. Why must he still go? Isn't this undemocratic?
The reason why we are calling for him to go is because, first, his administration lacks accountability. It also lacks transparency. And from where we see it as the youth, we see that if we just allow him to continue, he'll just change some things. Like the way you said, he has given in to some demands. But even in those demands, we still don't have accountability. For example, firing cabinet secretaries doesn't give us accountability. Because he said he's firing them based on their performance. If at all they were performing badly, and we know most of them have cases when it comes to graft, they have cases where they've misappropriated funds. Why haven't they been arrested and prosecuted or even maybe told to return that money? Those are some of the things that we are looking at the Gen Z movement, that we want accountability in our leadership.
The president has cautioned all of you against being used to destabilize his government and by extension the country. What's your reaction to that?
I wonder where that narrative is coming from, being used by who's using the youth. I don't believe that there is anyone who's using us. There's no one mobilizing us. I think if you can understand the background of this protest is that every young person in the streets today is out here because of their own reason. There are some people who don't have jobs. There are some people who are out here because they demand better. Someone like me, I'm out here because I want a bright future for even my kids. So there's no way Kenya can continue living like this and thinking that everything is okay. If we continue like this, we won't have any future for our kids. So I'm out here today. Just I'm doing it for my kids. He is claiming that foreigners are using us. Which foreigners? Why isn't he stating them? And remember, he got to power in that narrative of making the economy better. If you can see some of his clips online, he's talking about reducing what people are paying when it comes to taxes. But the moment when he got to power, he did the exact opposite.
Robert Mwangi is one of the Gen Z protesters in Kenya. He spoke with VOA's Peter Clotty from Nairobi. Malawi has declared the end of the country's worst ever cholera outbreak, which has killed nearly 2,000 people since its onset in March of 2022. In a statement on Monday, the Ministry of Health says the country has registered no cases and deaths from cholera in 26 of the country's 29 health districts for the past 4 weeks. Some health experts, however, say the outbreak could resurface if the country fails to address the sanitation problems that caused it. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
Malawi President Lazarus Chakwera launched the national campaign to end the cholera outbreak in February of last year. The Detect Cholera or Let's End Cholera campaign came 3 months after he declared cholera a public health emergency in Malawi. The campaign aimed to interrupt cholera transmission in all districts and reduce the cholera fatality rate from 3.2% to below 1%, which the World Health Organization considers a controlled cholera outbreak. Dr. Wilfred Chalamila Nkoma is co-chairperson for the Presidential Task Force on COVID-19 and cholera in Malawi. He told VOA the disease has now been defeated largely because of the campaign.
By WHO definition, a country comes to an end of an outbreak of cholera when they have gone at least 4 weeks without reporting laboratory confirmed case of cholera. So that's the case with Malawi right now. We haven't had their confirmed case since 6th of June.
Dr. Nkoma says this is because of several interventions Malawi conducted over the past 2 years. He says these include educating people on transmission, prevention and control of cholera, increased surveillance and proper management of cholera cases.
The key one, and that must continue to remain the key one, is to increase access to safe water and also improved adequate sanitation. The Ministry of Water and Sanitation was taking lead in this, but they were supported very well by non-governmental organizations that are working in the water and sanitation sector.
Dr. Nkoma says another measure was the oral cholera vaccination campaign, which began in December 2022.
We were able, as a country, to access some doses from WHO. We were able to administer no less than about 6 million doses of cholera vaccine, focusing first and foremost in priority areas.
The Ministry of Health says in its Monday statement that Malawi has registered 56,376 cases of cholera with 1,772 deaths since March of 2022. Maziko Matimba is National Community Health Ambassador in Malawi. He told VOA that Malawi seems to have managed the cholera outbreak at the treatment and case management levels, but adds that sanitation problems remain a challenge.
Because at the moment, if you go to villages, even into public places, people are not doing the sanitation issue properly. Even we check in public toilets, even we check how people are preparing their food and others, we find that we still have challenges as a country to contain diseases like cholera.
Dr. Nkoma says the government will continue its effort to educate people on how cholera is transmitted, prevented, and controlled to avoid a repeat of the outbreak in the future. Lamek Masina, VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
The Parliament of Gambia voted on Monday to reject a bill that would have ended a ban on female genital mutilation in the country. Aisaitu Dia Sawane is the chair of the Gambian National Women's Council and an FGM survivor. She tells me the defeat of the bill means that the practice will from now on be a criminal offense.
It was a milestone, it was a history rewritten again in the right direction. The atmosphere was really, really tense, but with the grace of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, we were able to, the outcome was victorious for us.
Does this mean now that FGM is banned forever? Or because I see there's some members of parliament who voted to remove the ban.
Yes, this means that this bill has been packed somewhere that it will never be found, because this is the law of the land. Its FGM has been criminalized in this country from 2015 or about that time. So it's a long time. And for it to now to surface, to come in back, to have people who want to repeal it, it was a big blow to us. It took us by surprise. But the way forward now is we are not going to relent. We have to continue to make sure that the law stays, and whosoever hears and knows, and these are the laws that are in place, these are the penalties that are in place, that whosoever will become an accomplice to this act of FGM, you are equally charged as a criminal towards that. So we need to have the law to be enforced properly. Enforced because, you know, people just was like, oh, okay, I don't know, I see this. It was just very slack. But the law has been there, and now it means not only that it's there to make sure that it is really enforced.
When you say it is really enforced, what do you want to happen to anyone who practices FGM from now on?
To be dealt with according to the law, the provisions that are given in terms of doing it. There is a fine and there is a jail time. So all of this needs to be done. But Gambia being a very small society and everybody knows everybody kind of thing, and no talking, we call it, you know, the Maslach syndrome, which is like we just like, oh, we are aunties, uncles and all related. So some of these things tend to just slide, and nobody would say it. But now, as it is going forward, means that the law has to be enforced to the fullest. And whosoever is convicted will receive the highest of the maximum penalty, whatsoever penalty it is. There are a series of them. Today, it was really good. We had the National Assembly members did an extremely good job. We had 34 in for it, for the bill to remain, and 19 were against it. So that was a very good thing. It was a victory, and now the women and the girls of this country are free from their oppressors.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you so very much.
Aisaitu Dia Sawane is the chair of the Gambian National Women's Council and an FGM survivor. She was speaking with me from the Gambian capital, Banjul. And that's it for this Tuesday, July 16th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your morning with us. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV show, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing that you will have an amazing Tuesday.
VOA Africa presents the latest news about Africa and the world and its news summaries. Africa in Brief airs every day at 400, 500 and 600 UTC. Give us 5 minutes of your time to be brought up to date. Africa in Brief, your trusted source